the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I am Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I am John Loeffler. And, you know, every year we say, when we get to this time of the year, we go, wow, it's that time of year. What time of year is that? Well, ironically, we're coming up both on Christmas and Hanukkah. And they start on the same day here this year. They're sort of matched up. It is the season to be giving. Ho, ho, ho. You see everybody standing out on the street corner with Salvation Army collecting money. There are charitable organizations that solicit income from people because they need to be able to give away to people who are in trouble or not as fortunate. There are gifts to family and to charity, as I just mentioned, but charity couples in with a thing called year-end tax planning and charitable giving. And so you have a few days left here to make up your mind as to what you're going to do. And that will be the subject of today's program, is year-end tax planning and charitable giving.
It's amazing because this is probably going to be a very important year for tax planning, depending on, well, one can assume that President-elect Trump and the Republican Congress are going to be passing a major tax reform bill coming next year. Now, depending on your income, depending on your level, that tax reform bill is going to put a cap on itemized deductions. As we talked on the program last week, and as we will be talking with my guest this week, estate planning attorney Adam Sherry, there is a cap on itemized deductions. So one of the things that you're going to want to do when you're getting together with your financial advisor or your CPA or whoever you use to do your planning, you're going to want to take a look at the difference of what those deductions might mean this year versus next year. Because if the Republicans and Trump get their tax reform bill, and there's a high probability that's going to happen, there's only going to be three tax brackets, 12, 25, and 33, versus the 39.6. And it's still questionable whether Trump will keep the 3.8% Medicare tax or phase out the Pease Amendment, which adds another 1%. Because right now, the top tax bracket, if you happen to be Larry Lots of Bucks, is 44.6% this year. So obviously, if you have a dollar of itemized deductions and you're in those higher tax brackets, that dollar of itemized deductions is going to be worth more this year than it will be next year. And so, John, I think right now we need to talk about some of the things that are typical that should be looked at when you're looking at itemized deductions or lowering your taxes for this year, because let's face it, we've got, what, about 3 or 4 weeks left.
And you should remember, as you think of year-end giving, that the Save the Loefflers Foundation is always available, because I need to cover my holiday gifts for people.
Holiday gifts, or how about Troy's education?
Ah, indeed, indeed. He gets his PhD in 1 week, so I'll be happy. That will pretty round out the most of the education. Let's do a restatement of some of the obvious things before we get to the charitable giving part, because that gets a little more complicated.
Yeah, well, we'll get into charitable gifting, and I want to cover QCDs. These are charitable gifts made with IRA distributions, but let's talk about some of the obvious things that you can do. Accelerate itemized deductions. In the state of California, John, we're allowed to make our property tax deductions and spread them out twice a year. We can pay them in November and we can pay them in April. So if you owe $10,000 in property taxes, you live in California, instead of paying half of it in November, $5,000, then the other half in April, $5,000, it would make a lot more sense to put those itemized deductions into this year, because I don't even care if you're middle class or single, because under Trump's plan, he would increase the standard deduction to $15,000 if you're a single, $30,000 if you're a married couple, but we're going to have lower tax brackets. So accelerate itemized deductions. What are the things that you can accelerate? You can accelerate charitable gifting. If you are thinking of making a gift or tithing to your church or giving to a charity during the Christmas season, those deductions are probably going to be worth more in 2016 than they will be in 2017. So charitable giving, property taxes. Another one is for many of you that are retired, that are making estimated tax payments, and you live in a state where you have state taxes, making sure you pay all of your state taxes, both property and state income taxes, this year, so you can accelerate those kind of things into 2016, because they'll be worth more to you for tax reasons this year. And then also charitable giving. So those are some of the things that you can do. If you are working, let's say at a public corporation or private corporation where you have a 401k program and you are age 50, either you or your spouse, you can take advantage of what we call the catch-up provision for being age 50 and over, which is an additional $6,000. So if some of you are getting a bonus at Christmas time, as employers hand out bonuses around this time of the year, you may want to consider accelerating your catch-up provisions in your 401k program.
What about individuals who are self-employed and who perhaps don't have a pension plan?
John, you bring up a good point. In fact, we were trying to get somebody that was a pension expert. The problem is there are so many different kind of pensions today, just like the tax laws. But if you are self-employed, if you get the paperwork done, you have till a later date to fund the actual contribution. But if you want to set up a pension plan, SEP IRA, a 401k, defined benefit plan, defined contribution, and profit sharing, I mean, there's a plethora of different plans. The important thing is you get the plan documents in place before December 31st, unless you're just going to put money in a simple IRA, and then you don't have to worry about that. But if you are going to set up a pension plan, it may behoove you to actually get that done now and get the paperwork, and you've got till the rest of the year to fund the pension plan. In fact, you can actually postpone it until September of next year. For example, if you have a defined benefit pension plan, you can postpone funding it till September of next year. The important point is really what you should be doing now, because there are tax law changes that are coming next year. There are estate tax law changes that are coming next year. Sit down with your CPA, sit down with your advisor, sit down with your estate planner. Do the planning now. Take a look at this year and what might change for you next year. And so that is something, John, you bring up a good point. There's the catch-up provisions for 401ks, and there is the fact that if you don't have the pension plan, to basically get the pension plan paperwork and get that in and done now.
Okay, now what about capital gains and how they figure in? I mean, people invest, say, for example, in mutual funds, and they're required by law to send out the cap gains and dividends by the end of the year. So you're sort of caught here, so to speak.
Yeah, you might want to consider what we call tax harvesting, because this happens and it catches a lot of people by surprise, especially if you are invested in a mutual fund. Any capital gains, both short or long term, any dividends are required to be sent and reported to you at the end of the year. And I call it this sort of the gotcha tax, because a lot of people will get these in December, November, when mutual funds make these distributions. And what will happen is, let's just give an example. Let's say you bought a mutual fund at the beginning of the year. You bought it at $10 a share. And let's just say this year the fund is up 10%. So 10% of $10, the shares are valued at $11. Now, let's suppose you didn't know that. Instead of buying it at $10, as the value of the fund was January 1st, let's say you bought the fund in August of this year. For example, at that time, the fund was worth $10.80 a share. So you buy the fund at $10.80 a share in December, they declare a dollar in capital gains. What happens is your share value drops from $11 to $10, reflecting the capital gain, dividend, and distribution. But in your case, you didn't buy the shares at $10, which is where the value was January 1st. You bought it at $10.80 when there was already an 80 cent capital gain built into the share price, you know, and then all of a sudden in December, the shares are worth, let's say, $11. They only went up 20 cents, but you get a dividend and capital gain distribution of a dollar. So one of the things you might want to do, we do this every year with our clients, it's called tax loss harvesting. Let's say if you got $5,000 in capital gains, what you might want to look at is anything in your portfolio, whether it's a mutual fund or it is a stock that is selling at less than what you paid for it, you would sell it to offset your capital gains. In the case, if the only thing you had was that mutual fund, which you bought at $10.80, now the shares are selling at $10 because they just declared a dollar capital gain distribution to you. You may want to consider selling the shares at $10 so you would have at least a 80 cent loss to offset the dollar in capital gains. Now, there's a rule. You have to wait at least 30 days before you get back into the fund. Or if you sold a stock, you would have to wait 31 days before you bought that stock back. Let's say you bought a stock, it's down, you sell it at a loss. The catch, you can offset your capital gains with it, but by the same token, you have to wait over 30 days before you get back into the same mutual fund or the same stock.
Well, ho, 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 it is the season. Let's get to the subject of charitable gifting, because this is typically when people do it, and explain how that may be different than anything else.
Well, I want to cover a couple areas here, because this is the time of the year. If you are age 70 and a half, you are required to take your minimum distribution, your RMD, from your IRA account. And that's very important, because a lot of times, John, people will have like several IRAs. And let's just give an example. Let's take Larry Lots of Bucks. And let's say he has three IRAs, each at $300,000 at three different brokerage companies. That required minimum distribution is based on all three IRAs combined, $900,000. And what we've seen over and over again, a lot of times people will have IRAs in different places. They forget about that. They take the distribution out of one IRA and they miss taking the full distribution. And folks, here's where it costs you. Let's say your distribution requirement is $10,000, but because you have your IRA in different places, you only take out $5,000. There is a 50% penalty tax on the other $5,000 you should have taken out. So please contact your advisor, mutual fund company, whatever you're doing, and really sit down and take a look at all your IRAs added together, because a lot of times people have them scattered all over the place. They forget about it, and then they're going to end up getting a penalty. So make sure you take your required minimum distribution, because if you don't, any under distribution, in other words, under withholding, is subject to a 50% tax penalty. And you don't want to catch yourself in that, because that can come back and bite. Now, I want to talk about something that gets a little bit more complicated. We'll try to simplify this. And this is something called a qualified charitable distribution. And it comes directly from an IRA to a charity. And the unfortunate thing over the years, when this was put into effect first in 2006, it's sort of one of those on again, off again, part of the infamous tax extenders. And we saw that during the Obama years and in the Bush years, where they would come up with these special tax deductions and they would expire within 12 months. Well, everybody waited the following year till the month of December to say, you know, are you going to extend it? And then they come together. Everybody remembers the year-end budget deals. And then all of a sudden they would extend them. And the good news here, there was a bill called Protecting Americans from Tax Hikes, PATH Act of 2015. They passed this last year with the Republican Congress, which made these qualified charitable distributions finally have been made permanent. And it's much easier to engage in sort of proactive charitable gifting strategies that will help to minimize the tax bite of an RMD from your IRA. RMD stands for required minimum distribution. And so the unfortunate thing, like so many things that Congress has done over the last 10, 15 years, is this was first put into place under Section 1201 of the Pension Protection Act of 2006. It was passed under George W. Bush, and it was put into effect for 2 years, 2006 and 2007. After 2007, it basically lapsed. Well, guess what? Towards the end of December, and you remember how tumultuous the markets were in 2008, at the end of 2008, they extended it for one more year in 2009 under what we call the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act, infamously known as TARP. Remember the alphabet soup programs that the Fed and the government was passing during the financial crisis? So that was signed into law. However, they only extended it for 1 year until 2009. Well, fast forward, and what happens is they were brought back again in 2010. They were brought back again in 2011. But here was the difficulty. They were reinstated 2 weeks before the end of the year, leaving very little time for anyone to actually make what is called a qualified charitable distribution. And there's all kinds of rules and red tapes that go into effect to make this legal. And sadly, the pattern was repeated in 2012. It was repeated in 2013. It was repeated again in 2014. And unfortunately, I forget what year it was. I think it was 2014. It was one of the years where they were having the sequester debate and arguments in Congress. They passed it like the last week of the year. Well, there was no way you could comply with the act. Well, the good news here is the PATH Act of 2015 has made these QCDs retroactively permanent, and they reinstated them to 2015. So they're finally made permanent.
Yeah, I would qualify that, Jim, and say permanent until we get another administration, in Congress, because nothing is permanent in Congress.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing. And as we were talking about estate planning, as I will with Adam Sherry, if Trump gets to change the estate tax laws, the stepped-up basis, they're only good for as long as he's president, because another administration could come in and reverse, as we've seen so often happen. We had tax reductions with George Bush. We got tax increases with Barack Obama. So now we're going to get tax reductions under Donald Trump. Now, here are some rules. And folks, if you have a pencil, take these down, because it's very, very important that you dot your I's and cross your T's on this, or it's not going to work. In order to get a qualified charitable distribution from your IRA, and let me explain what we're doing here. Basically, let's say your required distribution is $10,000 this year. You decide you're in a high tax bracket, you want to make a charitable gift. You can take $5,000 of your $10,000 distribution and distribute it to a charity, and it has to be done in a certain way, leaving only $5,000 reportable on your tax return. You don't get a tax deduction. You just simply don't report the $5,000 of your required distribution that went to a charity. Now, there's a number of rules. Rule number one, you must be age 70 and a half at the time you do your QCD, your qualified distribution. 70 and a half and older on the date. Now, this is important, on the date you make the distribution. It can't be you're turning 70 and a half sometime this year. You actually have to be 70 and a half. That's the first thing. And also, you can be eligible for a QCD if you are a beneficiary age 70 and a half of an IRA distribution. So that's the first law. You must be 70 and a half. Let me clarify. 70 and a half, not turning 70 and a half. You must actually be 70 and a half. Rule number two, the IRA distribution or QCD to a charity is limited to $100,000 in a single year per taxpayer. So if you and your wife, let's say you're Mr. and Mrs. Larry Lots of Bucks, Larry can make a $100,000 distribution to a charity from his IRA, and Larry's wife could make a $100,000 distribution from her IRA. So a married couple can each do $100,000, in this case, $200,000. Now, here's another important rule. These QCDs are only eligible from an individual IRA or an IRA rollover. They are not eligible from a SEP or a SEP IRA. And you could do them from a Roth IRA, but it's really basically irrelevant because distributions from a Roth IRA are tax-free anyway. The next rule that has to be observed is the distribution has to go to a public charity under IRC rules 170B-1-A. They cannot go to a private foundation. So you have to make sure that the distribution you're giving to a charity is a qualified charity under IRS IRC rules 170 in order to be eligible for this full deduction. Also, the IRA donor cannot receive any what we call kickbacks or quid pro quo benefits for doing so. Now, gets a little bit more complicated. In order to receive this favorable treatment for a QCD in the current tax year, you must have the charity. This is very, very important. I want you to write this down. The charity should have the check by December 31st. In practice, this means beginning the process to complete the QCD by mid-December, because here's what's going to happen. You're going to call up your plan administrator of your IRA, and you're going to say, and let's just keep this simple. Let's say you're going to take out $10,000. You're going to keep $5,000 for yourself, and you're going to give $5,000 to Salvation Army, let's say. Your plan administrator is going to send you a personal check for $5,000 made payable to the Salvation Army. You, in turn, are going to have to get that mailed prior to December 31st and get it in the hands of a charity. So it must be postmarked prior to December 31st. So let's just go back a bit and talk about this rule, because a lot of people get this one messed up and end up getting disqualified. Number one, you let your plan administrator know, and let's say in this example, let's stick with the $10,000, you are required to take out $10,000 out of your IRA this year in a required minimum distribution. You're going to give half of it to the Salvation Army, $5,000. So you notify your plan administrator that you want $5,000 in a check, because they're going to send the check to you, not to the charity. It's going to be your responsibility. They're going to send the check to you, and you, in turn, are going to have to take that check, put it in an envelope, mail it, and make sure it's postmarked to the Salvation Army prior to December 31st. And so it's very important that this be done, because if it isn't done in that sequence, number one, you're age 70 and a half. Number two, there's a limitation in terms of the amount. Number three, it has to be to a qualified charity. Number four, that check has to be in the charity's hand prior to December 31st.
Why don't you walk people through that? I think this gets a little complicated, or at least some complications, and maybe if you explained it, they'd understand what you're saying.
Okay, so let's take Larry Lots of Bucks. Larry has an IRA of $152,000. He's 71 years old. So number one, he satisfied the first QCD rule. He's over age 70 and a half. So Larry's age 71. His required minimum distribution is $5,736. Larry decides he wants to give $5,000 to his favorite charity. So he's required to take $5,700. $5,000 would go to the charity, and Larry would report on his tax return $736. On the other hand, if Larry decided he wanted to give $6,000, he would not only satisfy his RMD of $5,736, he would get no tax deduction, but the $6,000 withdrawal from his IRA would be completely non-taxable because 100% of it would go to charity.
Yeah, maybe you could sum this up, because as I'm listening, you know, we're doing this verbally. This gets a little confusing, so try to sum it up here.
Okay. Rule number one is you have to be 70 and a half at the time you make the distribution. So age 70 and a half is rule number one. Rule number two, the distribution form needs to be submitted to your IRA custodian requesting the check be made payable directly to the charity. You cannot have them send out the $10,000 in the illustration and then you write out a check for a charity for $5,000. It's not going to work that way. Rule number two, you notify the IRA custodian who to make the check payable to. Number three, ensure that no tax withholding is being done on the QCD. In other words, the amount, let's say you're making $5,000 to charity. You do not want your custodian to withhold taxes, because then you're not going to get the full distribution. In other words, if the charity withheld 20% of your $5,000 distribution, you would have $1,000 of taxable income to you, because the charity would only get $4,000 instead of $5,000. So no tax withholding, number three. Number four, you have to send the check directly to charity and make sure it gets there prior to December 31st. And so, John, those are the main rules. And I guess the good news here is a lot of people, especially as they get older and if they have larger distributions, is that this rule is finally made permanent, because for quite honestly, almost for the last 7 or 8 years, they would pass it at the end of the year. And then all of a sudden, you know, you got 2 weeks to plan and people weren't getting it done. And then also all of these rules got clarified, as I just mentioned, the 70 and a half, the qualified charity, the check, all those things got clarified. And so now you can do a little bit more in tax planning.
A reminder, by the way, that Adam Sherry is going to be our guest on the program tomorrow. And you and Adam are going to be discussing the proposal of Donald Trump to get rid of estate taxes, which a lot of people actually think these are virtually immoral, because families, you know, businesses worked their whole lives. They paid the tax on the money when they brought it in as income. Now you're taxing it again as it moves around. So he's talking about getting rid of those, and then some other things, I think, on capital gains.
This is time to revisit your estate plan. And the real key here going forward is you better keep your estate plan flexible and fluid, because right now the exemption for 2016 is $5,499,000, or for 2017, it went up basically about $49,000. So a husband and wife, if they have an AB trust, can shelter almost $11 million. Now, if Trump does away with estate taxes, he's also talking about getting rid of the stepped-up basis and cost for estates that are valued over $10 million, meaning that there could be capital gains. So if this law gets passed, no estate taxes is probably only as good as Trump remains president, because if another president came in, and let's say after Trump, let's say Trump only serves one term, they could easily reinstate estate taxes, just as Obama came in and reinstated the higher Clinton taxes and added a few more taxes. So the real key thing for a husband and wife is you want to have something called a disclaimer trust, which allows you to pass your estate on in one trust or to separate your estate in two trusts, depending on what the laws happen or whoever changes. Because we know this, John, every single administration, Ronald Reagan changed tax laws. George W. Bush changed tax laws. Bill Clinton changed tax laws. George W. changed tax laws. Barack Obama changed tax laws. And Trump is going to change tax laws. The message I'm trying to get to you folks is the tax laws are only as good as that administration remains in power, because they're usually changed by the next administration.
So hurry up and die.
You don't want to hear a great story. There was this period, it was 2010, when there was no estate taxes. We had 1 year And then, of course, they brought back the exemption in the tax rates. But in 1 year, in 2010, we didn't have any estate taxes. And George Steinbrenner, the owner of the Yankees, multi-billionaire, passed away, John, at the right time. He was able to pass his estate on to his family with no estate taxes. So timing, folks, is everything. I mean, you know, it is just the way things go. So you really want to keep things flexible. And I can tell you this, we're going to be doing major estate planning next year with a lot of, especially our wealthier clients, because there's a chance for disclaimer trust that should be changed from AB. There is a chance to get rid of estate taxes permanently through something called an irrevocable trust. And for estates larger than $10 million with significant capital gains in a business, piece of real estate or stocks, we're going to be doing charitable remainder trust. So next year is going to be a major year of tax planning. And if there's anything I want you to walk away from this is, if you have an estate plan, you think it's set in stone, think again. Major law changes are coming in 2017.
And once again, we're going to have Adam Sherry as our guest on the program tomorrow here on Lifetime Income. Now, it is time for the weekly case study based on a real-life example. The names of the people involved are changed to protect their privacy. But we do have information posted on the site, slides that go along with the conversation here, which demonstrate the principles which we have been discussing. So I'm assuming we have a couple here again this week.
We have a case this week. The couple is Robert and Sarah Brown. Robert is age 65. Sarah is actually age 69, older than Robert. Robert wants to retire soon. Sarah currently is retired. Based on the healthcare questionnaire, Robert's life expectancy is age 90. Sarah is age 93. Risk tolerance is conservative. They want income with capital preservation. Now, Robert was a corporate lawyer. He's tired of working long hours and having to travel on a regular basis. He wants to retire and really spend more time offering his services to his church and a nonprofit that he and his wife are involved with. He is uncertain about his ability to retire, would like to continue making regular contributions to charity, which is important to both of them. Robert has a pension and holds a large amount of company stock he received from bonuses over the years. Sarah was a retired therapist. She's been retired for the last couple of years, but is busier now than when she was working, as she told us. She spends most of her time working as a volunteer at a private school and is heavily involved with her favorite charity, helping underprivileged children. Really, really neat couple. When Sarah isn't volunteering, she is very involved with her grandkids. If her husband retires, Sarah would like to continue making regular contributions to charity. Charitable gifting is just a way they were raised. It's very important to them.
And as we just discussed, Jim, there are all kinds of complications on charitable gifting. So how did you navigate this minefield?
Well, there were a number of things that were important to both Robert and Sarah. Number one, they wanted to continue to support charities. Number two, they still wanted to leave a legacy to their kids. Three, as any couple, they wanted to maintain the same lifestyle. And number four is, with many couples, managing taxes. When we take a look at their budget, their essential budget was $61,800. Discretionary was $40,000. A lot of that was charitable giving. Total expenses, roughly about $102,000. Robert's salary was $150,000. Sarah's Social Security was $19,000. So they had surplus income of $67,000. Looking at their budget in retirement, it would change. Essential budget would stay about the same, around $62,000. Discretionary giving budget would drop roughly in half to about $21,000. So their budget would be $83,400. Robert's pension income from his company would be $43,000. Their combined Social Security would be $52,000. They would have an annual surplus of $11,600. Taking a look at their investment portfolio, non-investment assets, their primary residence was $460,000. They had roughly personal property at $25,000. Robert's retirement plan had $721,000 in it. Sarah's retirement plan, $263,000. And their joint account had cash of $535,000, total investments of $1,005,000, and remember, on top of total income of almost $95,000 coming in from Robert's pension and Social Security. So their net worth was roughly about $2 million. So what did we do? A couple things. They wanted to manage their expenses to include charitable gifting, which was very important to them and the foundations and the charitable work they were doing. Taxes, since both Robert and Sarah have pensions, which are 100% taxable. Same with their Social Security because of their income. 85% of their Social Security would be taxable. They wanted legacy planning for their kids and favorite charities and concerned about longevity risk. So going back, they had $43,000 coming in from Robert's pension, $52,000 in combined Social Security. What we did is we took both their IRA rollovers and we put it in our balanced fund, which was paying roughly about $31,000. And we also did the same with their joint account because it was mainly sitting in money market fund. They basically had a lot of things that they were just kind of sitting on until their plan was done. So total investment income was $47,000. Grand total income was $142,000, less their budget. They had a surplus almost of $59,000. So what we did, they wanted to support charities. So we used highly appreciated stock that Robert had with his company to gift to charity in place of cash. This reduces the taxes, meaning he got a charitable deduction for it. In addition, he could avoid any capital gains on the appreciated stock. The other thing we did is once they turn age 70 and a half, when they would have to take required minimum distributions, because remember, between both their IRAs, it was over $1 million, we'd use them to gift to charity. We would use the QCD we talked about earlier in the program. In terms of legacy planning, we developed something called a disclaimer trust that can specifically meet each of their heirs' wishes. And there were some gifts of the IRA to charity, making QCDs, and to taxable accounts in their kids, especially 529 plans for their grandkids that they could make gifts to their children. That money could go into a 529 plan, which would be tax-free for their grandchildren's education. And we continued to make financial gifts, but also we developed some income strategies with appreciated stock that would grow over time and increase their distributions. So here, John, we were making outright gifts to charity of appreciated stock. And then also we plan on making QCDs or qualified charitable deduction gifts out of their IRA when their RMDs start with Sarah in about 2.5 years and with Robert in roughly about 4.5 years. So in this case, charitable gifting, both out of the IRA and of appreciated stock.
Another example of a successful case study. Don't forget, tomorrow, Adam Sherry is our guest on the program. Anything else coming up as we head into the end of the year?
We're pretty much going to stick with year-end tax planning because, folks, you only have this month to get it done. We covered a little bit on the difference between Trump in the current tax laws last week because big tax law changes are coming next year. Income tax changes and estate tax changes are coming next year. And we're going to stick with all kinds of end of the year tax strategies because I think that's really important to cover here because, John, I've seen so many people make the wrong moves or not take advantage of moves or like in the, as we covered in a topic today on QCDs, not get all their I's dotted and their T's crossed. So we're going to stick with that till the end of the year. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. for our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.